Australian True Crime is an independent podcast. If you help us, we can continue creating and improving our content. That's our promise to you. To support us, simply hit the follow button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This will help us grow and ensure you're notified as soon as a new episode is released.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The producers of this podcast recognize the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present, and those emerging.
The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
One of the things I really miss is his phone calls to me, to talk to me, because he used to call us all quite regularly just to see how we're going, how our kids are going, his grandkids are going, what we've been up to tell us about things he'd been up to, where he'd been camping, things he'd seen when he was out camping, those sorts of things. So I think we really miss the phone calls from him.
Yes. And he would call about, you know, asking questions. He'd more recently would be calling about his drone, needing help with setting it up, his phone, that sort of thing. Obviously his age is, you know, not really into technology in that way. And
the drone was quite new.
Yeah, it was like his new toy and really just wanted to get the most out of it. And yeah, but checking up how we were going, I think he would do it at times that Mum was out at one of her things that she does each week. He'd be at home by himself. He'd call us up and have a chat. So, yeah, I really do miss those.
Yeah.
Yes, and I think a memory that just keeps popping in my mind, it's the last time we saw him at my daughter's birthday. Just thinking of the things he said and what I said and just what I wish I had said. Just, that's a hard memory, but it's just what it is.
Yeah.
And I think I found my daughter's birthday this year really difficult, just knowing that it was like an anniversary of that last time. But at the same time, trying to be happy for my daughter. It was her birthday, so I just found that really hard.
That's Russell Hill's daughters, Debbie and Colleen. speaking to media 20 months after he and his companion Carol Clay disappeared from the Wanangatta Valley in northeast Victoria. Neither family had faced the media since the elderly couple had gone missing and their campsite had been found burnt out in March 2020. The sisters confirmed that neither they nor their mother had known until police informed them of their father's relationship with Carol Clay. It had been going on for some time, according to Carol's sister, who said the couple had camped in the valley often. According to his daughters, it was a very special place for Russell.
He really liked the solitude up there because he doesn't really like big crowds of people. And he just enjoyed just being in the environment up there. It was hard for him initially when he retired because he felt a bit lost on what to do with himself, because working full time, then not working at all is a big change. But
went to camping. Bought the best tent he could, all those things.
Set up his vehicle.
Yeah, set up the vehicle
properly to enjoy it more and be safer overall. I think that's what he really started to really enjoy doing in his retirement.
When I was a child, it just seemed like it was really his favourite place. Mm. So when he did retire and started to go there camping, it just made sense to us that he would do that. And for him to, go back often, it's like that's his place,
So that's what he definitely thought.
Because he would go and not set a date to return. Like, he didn't plan things that way. He would just go with enough things to stay as long as he wanted, maybe depending on the weather, I don't know. But, he wouldn't really set a date to return. But as soon as, not really hearing from him is not usual and worrying. So,
yeah,
just that regular call that he was planning to be making or did usually make with his radio friends, that not happening. Although, there's always that chance that, the radio wasn't working or he was somewhere where it didn't work. It just wasn't usual, and I think Mum realised that and started to get worried, and that's when started. Really.
Yeah, for her to be worried, it really meant a lot.
Over the months, many theories had been tabled as to what might have happened to Russell Hill and Carol Clay. Rumours of accidental shootings by deer hunters, hooligans with illegal firearms, and of course, the spooky Button Man, who's said to creep around the mountains, appearing in people's campsites unannounced, even taking photos of them with their own cameras while they sleep. All of this adds to the terrible trauma and ambiguous loss of the families of the missing, who can't help but consider every possibility.
You've got to stop thinking about them too much because you can go too far in your mind. Ridiculous. And you're guessing because we know nothing about what happened. It's just left a real big hole, deep hole, inside without him.
Yeah. And I do think about our kids not really remembering him because they didn't really have the time we had. So
yeah,
that worries me.
I just really miss him, just talking to him.
Not knowing what he thinks about things that are happening in our life or in the kids' lives. Or
something you might want to tell him and you think, I'll ring Dad, and we can't.
Yeah.
You just say, Dad would have liked to know that.
To get answers would be massive, Even some hints at an answer would be good. And just have an idea of, whether he suffered, for instance, or not. Just to get some sort of idea to stop this just going around in circles worrying and wondering what could have happened. And, it's like we're on hold.
Coming up on Australian True Crime, we'll share again the details of the one car that was in Wanangatta Valley on the night Russell Hill and Carol Clay disappeared that Victoria Police have not been able to trace. There are images of the car on our social media pages as well. We'll also hear from Zee Meyer, whose husband Warren is one of the several other people who've disappeared in the region in the last 15 years, in similar circumstances. Like Russell and Carol, Warren Meyer is still missing. But first, Keith Layden is a resident of Victoria's High Country and a historian. He loves the place and he joined me to help me understand the culture of the area, because the more we hear and read about it during the search for these missing people, the more lawless it sounds. While Keith disputes the idea that Victoria's High Country is lawless, he has written a book called The Wanangatta Mystery about the first recorded unsolved murder in the valley, which happened in 1917.
The story goes that an American, Oliver Smith, was prospecting, and prospecting up the Wanangatta River, and then he came to the Wanangatta Valley and saw it and straight away said, oh, cattle, gotta be. And he then went and got his de facto wife and the children and settled the valley. And William Bryce was a cartage contractor. He had horses, pack horses.
I was in carts.
Yeah, cartage, yeah. There was a lot of gold towns around Wanangatta, and William Bryce used to bring in goods from Myrtleford to those towns, and the way through was through the Wanangatta Valley. And he became friends with Oliver Smith, and the story goes that Oliver Smith asked him to become a partner, which he did. In 1870, the first lease by William Bryce was signed, but Oliver Smith's de facto died in childbirth. Well, she died about 10 days after giving birth to twins, 1872. The children were two girls, Mary and Melinda, and Alan Smith died after about 11 days, and then I think it's 12 days, one of the twins died, and the next day the other one died. That was the beginning of the Wanangatta Cemetery, so they're buried there, yeah.
Oh, that poor man too. God, how awful.
Well, he was devastated, and he was illiterate, but he got a large piece of slate from down by the river and made a gravestone. And the story is that Mrs. Bryce wrote on a piece of paper what he should put on the gravestone, which he did, but being illiterate, he put the end the wrong way.
Oh, we can forgive him that, bless him.
Yeah.
Oh.
But he then left the valley, left everything to William Bryce. When William Bryce brought his family in, two of his children were quite young, so they came in kerosene tins tied either side of a pack horse.
Oh, little babies?
No, well, toddlers.
Toddlers sitting in big kerosene tins.
Tins, yes. The lids were cut off. The top was cut off the kerosene tin, and they were just sitting in there probably with a pillow and a blanket and either side of the pack horse.
That is adorable. Oh, gosh.
Oh, look, it's not, I don't know about supernatural, but certainly is a beautiful place.
Well, listen, we haven't got to the supernatural bit yet, so just you hold your horses and your kerosene tins, because we're getting there. I guess I'm trying to figure out when we get to the creepiness of the place, because, look, it's so beautiful, and you've pointed me in the direction of the Wanangatta Valley Facebook page. It's stunning, lovely photographs and drone footage of the area. When do deer enter the equation? Were there always wild deer in the valley, or were they introduced later?
Introduced, yeah.
Yeah, right, because they're not native to Australia, are they?
No, they're not, no.
Right.
And they're in plague proportions at the moment too. But you're not allowed to have guns in the valley under a certain calibre. So you can't have a shotgun or a 22 or anything like that. You can only have a high-powered rifle capable of shooting deer.
That sounds worse.
Well, those guns would still be in there anyway, but you're not allowed to hunt rabbits in there or ducks or anything like that, only deer.
Okay.
So anyone with a gun below a certain calibre could be charged and have their gun confiscated.
Well, that sounds great in theory, but also how do they, well, we won't even get into that because you're not going to know the answer. No one knows the answer really about how well it can be policed, right? Police do their best. We all know that. And
the park rangers.
Park rangers. They got park rangers,
yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah, certainly park rangers, yeah.
But they also, don't they have gates? Like for some time of the year it's actually gated, you can't get in there?
Yeah, from Queen's Birthday weekend until Cup weekend, a fair bit of the Victorian Alps is closed with gates to stop four-wheel drives cutting up all the tracks and all the flats, turning them into bogs.
Oh, because it's just too wet.
It's just too wet for continual, you know, vehicles. One or two going through make enough mess, but if it's open, so the Wanangatta Valley itself is closed from that time, but you were still allowed to go in there and shoot, but you have to walk or ride a horse in. No, you're not allowed to drive in, but people do cut the gates and cut the locks off and drive in.
Who are these people? This is what I'm trying to get to, Keith. It seems to attract a pretty hardcore type of person.
Well, there are wonderful people who obey the law that hunt deer. There's a lot of them. It's just the rogue ones that give all of them the bad reputation. And, you know, the Deer Association work with the rangers. They do work in there. They do work in the Alps. They, you know, look after some of the huts and, you know, clear tracks and things like that. They're not all Rambos.
Well, okay, but even when you say that, it sounds like, but there are some Rambos.
Well, there are idiots in all society doing, whether it be, you know, racing in the streets or, you know, anything like that, that you always get people that push it to the limit.
Yeah, but when I read theories about where missing people are, and certainly recently it's about Carol Clay and Russell Hill, the elderly two who've gone missing up in the high country, you read little, just these little throwaway lines, like there had been people stealing from camps a bit around the place. So, oh, and there was, yeah, a few people who were camping up there said that they'd look up and there was a mystery bloke standing on the other side of their fire. Oh, and then there's the button man. Oh, yeah, yeah, there is the button man. Oh, yeah, and then there's these people who bury big drums of supplies so they can come back in later. And then there's those blokes who hunt with bows and arrows. It's terrifying, Keith. Just the way people describe the people who hang out in the Wanangatta Valley is like, who are these people? What is this place? It sounds like Deliverance.
Well, I'll make a comparison. Down in Melbourne, you've got drug dealers on corners, gangsters shooting each other,
Keith,
hitting innocent bystanders, burglaries happening all over, people breaking into houses and stealing car keys.
I don't.
No.
Not in this concentrated area.
Yeah, and I certainly don't do anything like that in Wanangatta. I'm just making an analogy, a comparison, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Okay. It's great to think somewhere you don't know or you haven't been.
Yeah.
You visualise what it's like and you frighten yourself in a way.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like the
right.
dark. We're not scared of the dark because we can't see. It's because we don't know what's out there.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Would it be fair to say that it's, I mean, is it the kind of place that I should just like go to BCF and buy a tent and take my kids away for a long weekend? I mean,
certainly. It's no different to any other of the mountain camping spots. It's, you know, when I say it's no different, it is, of course it's different. But there's, you know, there has been, you know, a bit of a mystery in the last couple of years. But before that, well, it was over 100 years before anything else that was of note happened in the valley.
Because they talk about poachers. People say, oh, poachers got them. And all this stuff about...
But what would you be poaching in Wanangatta? There's nothing in there but wild animals and people. There's nothing to poach.
That's what I don't understand. Are they poaching deer? And then if so, isn't it legal to hunt deer? Or is there a time of year where it's not or something? What's the story with that?
Well, certainly you can hunt deer in there. There is a deer season. You've got to have a license. But Wanangatta is not the only place they hunt. And on the valley floor, there's not many deer hunters that hunt during the summer months. It's mostly done in there in the winter. And there shouldn't be any campers in there.
Oh, but Carol Clay and Russell Hill were camping in August, was it?
No, March.
March? So they were camping in a legal time?
Yes, yeah. And if there were people shooting in there, they certainly shouldn't have been.
Oh, I see. So that was what the problem was. Well, potentially,
yes.
If they were in fact killed by deer hunters, then the deer hunters would have been hunting illegally.
I'm not sure about that.
If we can look at the most recent disappearances. Carol Clay and Russell Hill are the most recent, and they certainly got a lot of attention for a lot of reasons. Initially, it was because it was just a very sudden and mysterious disappearance of two people who clearly knew what they were doing. Certainly, Russell Hill was a camper. He knew the area.
He knew the area well. He put the Zeekit spur track in the late 80s, working on a bulldozer. So he knew the area well. And, you know, when they were camped in the valley, there were many other camps there as well, further along the valley. So he was a pretty regular visitor to the valley as far as just recreation and camping.
Unfortunately, those two lovely people still are unaccounted for. And their campsite was found burnt. Someone had tried to set fire to it. It was in disarray and they were nowhere to be found. And then very soon after that, it was discovered that they were not married to each other. And in fact, he was married to someone else. So that added sizzle to the story. But also then, soon after that, other people chimed in, his friends and other people, to say that's not how he would have set up his camp. There are lots of strange things about this case.
And as far as the camp being set up differently, I don't know anything about that. I've seen the site and it's how I would set up a camp. They had the tent attached to the car, which you do. So if you get rain, you can walk out and get to the car, you know, to get things out of it without getting wet. They had a toilet set up, just a porta potty, I think. But they were only camped 100 metres from a long drop toilet. They were right on the river, so it's a perfect camping spot. It's actually quite a pretty spot.
And there's lots of horrible, horrible rumours and stories involving things ranging from illegal hunters to wild dogs, aren't they? Awful. We haven't even discussed that. What's with the wild dogs? Are there really packs of wild dogs around the valley?
There are certainly wild dogs there. When you camp, sometimes you can hear them howling at night. They don't, not as far as I'm concerned. I've been there camping there many times and I've not had any come in the camp. But you do hear them howling out there at night, and there's certainly plenty around all over the bush in Victoria.
Well, the suggestion is not so much that they would attack and kill anybody as it is that if, God forbid, if you had an accident, let's say, that they may take care of your remains.
Yeah, that's certainly a very good possibility. If they were above ground and dead, there certainly would be animals having a go at it, and wild dogs wouldn't be the only ones.
No, absolutely. In the wilderness, animals will take care of your remains pretty quickly. The Button Man. Let's discuss the Button Man. Again, initially a very salacious part of the story. Everyone was very excited about this eccentric guy, and they created a boogeyman out of him really quickly and effectively in the media. What's your understanding of this person? Have you ever met him?
No, I've never met him, but I have seen him in town, and his nickname is Buttons, which got expanded by media into the Button Man because it sounds much more mysterious.
Doesn't it? And scary.
As I understand it, he's in his 70s, a bird watcher, and he sends information on to one of the universities in Melbourne. He lives in Melbourne, comes up for 6 months of the year and lives in the mountains and, gets around. He can appear in your camp at times, apparently stay for a cup of tea and then head off. No trouble at all. I think when the police interviewed him, I think it might have been as much as anything as to find out what he'd seen, not what he was involved in.
That's reiterated by a number of locals as well, and certainly that characterisation that he's a pretty gentle soul who's a bird watcher.
I think he's certainly a little bit eccentric, there's no doubt about that.
And that's not a crime?
No. No, it's not a crime to be different.
I hope it's not, otherwise I'm in a lot of trouble. Keith?
William Bryce died in 1910.
Our carriager who bought the first freeholds there in the beautiful valley.
Yeah, and bought his family with his children in the kerosene tins.
Yeah.
But by then it was quite a large and successful property. The army were buying their horses. A lot of the horses from Warrnambatta were used in the First World War, and their cattle was bringing top price at the markets. When he died, he left the station to one daughter and son, not to his wife.
Oh,
which was,
how come?
Well, I think it was probably, from what I understand, it was a bit of a custom at the time.
Oh, yeah.
But Mrs. Bryce had two daughters buried in the cemetery, and she wanted to be buried with them. So the children agreed not to sell the station until after she passed away, so she could be buried in the cemetery, which she did in 1914. Her funeral was attended by quite a lot of people in the area. It was quite a large funeral. And she was buried with her daughter, Jessie, who died at 21 from consumption, which is now tuberculosis, as we call it. Yeah. When they sold the property, a partnership of Arthur Phillips and Jeffrey Ritchie from Mansfield, they were two big property owners in Mansfield, bought it and installed a fellow, Jim Barclay, as a manager. Around late 1917, Jim Barclay employed a cook come handyman helper by the name of John Bamford. 2 weeks after he started, after John Bamford started, they both rode to Talbotville to vote in the referendum for conscription for the First World War. They stayed the night there with the post office owner there, Albert Stout, and left in the morning. And that was the last time they were seen alive, except by the people that killed them. A neighbour, Harry Smith, was a friend of Barclay's. He lived at Eagle Vale. He rode over the mountains into Warrnambool regularly, and he used to bring Barclay's mail, which he would get from Talbotville. It was a common thing in the mountains that if you were going past someone's farm or property and you were going through town, you'd pick up their mail. When Smith got to the homestead was empty and there was a note written on the door in chalk, "Home tonight." So he stayed the night. No one came, so he left the mail on the table and rode back to Eagle Vale. A month later, he came back again, and the mail was still where he'd left it. And obviously no one had been in the place. It was exactly as he left it. So he sent a telegram to Jeffrey Ritchie that he'd been twice and there was nobody there. Jeffrey Ritchie rode over from Mansfield to Warrnambool and then on to Eagle Vale, and they went back to Warrnambool to search. And about a quarter of a mile from the homestead, they were riding along the creek bed there and noticed a red blanket. And when they got closer, there was a skull sticking out of the sand.
Oh, no.
And they thought the skull was just sitting there on its own, so they got a stick to roll it over, but it was attached to the body still, and the body was buried in the sand, and that was the manager, Jim Barclay.
Mm-hmm.
They let the police know, and John Bamford was nowhere to be found. His clothes were in a mess on the floor. Looked like he got changed really quickly and taken off. His horse was missing. They put out a warrant for his arrest. As spring started to come, Harry Smith, the neighbour, went to the police in Dargo and said, "I think you'll find John Bamford on Mount Howard." So they organised a search party and went and looked and found him about a quarter of a mile from Howard Hut, under a log with a bullet in his left temple.
Oh, God.
And an autopsy report showed that he'd been dead about 9 months, so it's about the same time Barclay was killed.
So they were able to do a decent autopsy. I was just sitting here thinking, oh, and of course they wouldn't have had any forensics or anything like that, but they were able to do a decent autopsy. That's good.
Yeah, they did it on a table in the Dargo pub.
Yeah, but sure, but at least they were able to do it.
Yes, and Barclay's autopsy was done at the Mansfield Hospital, and then an inquest was held at the Mansfield Courthouse into his death. Mm. It was established to have been shot in the back with his own shotgun. And Bamford had been shot in the temple with probably Barclay's pistol. So whoever did it used two weapons that were already on the property.
Yeah. Any theories as to who did it?
Oh, there was a lot of theories, cattle theft.
Mm.
But the list of things missing from the station, the only stock missing was the horse Thelma that Bamford was riding. There were no cattle listed as stolen. And the list was put together by Arthur Phillips, the owner, so he would know how many, you know, head of stock he had there and so forth. So,
and you'd think if they killed them both, there's nothing stopping them from taking all the cattle.
Yes, that's right. You know, some checks were stolen out of Barclay's checkbook. His suit was stolen. Yeah, there were a few other things missing, just bits and pieces. I think that might have been done to try and make it look like a burglary. But there was also a rumour that he was seeing a woman regularly and that possibly the family weren't happy about it. There's even been rumours that a jealous husband wasn't happy. But, again, rumours.
Yeah, because it seems as though the cattle was the most valuable thing there, right? So if you leave the cattle behind, maybe you don't have anywhere to put them or...
Well, I think, yeah, I think, you know? Stealing a big herd of cattle would immediately draw attention to you when you're down at the sale yards trying to sell them and they've got a Warrnambool brand or something you're trying to alter. I think that would really have the police zeroing in, not that they weren't.
Yeah, yeah.
So there were many other theories and so forth. When they were hunting for Bamford, apparently a lot of people in the high country were really scared. People in Mansfield were scared that, you know, John Bamford, the murderer, might come over, not knowing that he was already dead on Mount Howard.
Mm. Someone bigger and badder was wandering around.
Yes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So it seems the High Country has run on theories of what fate has befallen people for a very long time. Coming up on Australian True Crime, we hear from Zee Meyer, whose husband Warren disappeared from there in 2018, amidst rumours that sound like the plot of a horror movie, and he's still missing. While rumours have circulated for over a year and a half now about what happened to Russell Hill and Carol Clay in March 2020, Missing Persons Squad boss Detective Inspector Andrew Stamper spoke to 60 Minutes just days ago about the theory he and his Victoria Police colleagues have pieced together. It hinges on the one car that was in Wanangatta Valley on the night Russell and Carol disappeared that they've not been able to track down and identify. Police have CCTV images of the vehicle and an artist's impression. The driver of this car is literally the only known person who was in the vicinity on that night whom police haven't interviewed about the matter.
We believe it's a mid-90s Nissan Patrol. This one is dark blue. It's got the roof rack, the side steps, obviously the off-road tyres and the bull bar. It has a trailer on it, which is a fairly standard trailer, but the wheels are off-road wheels.
On the night Russell and Carol disappeared, witnesses saw a vehicle that matched this description parked near the campsite, then heard it leaving around midnight before getting caught on a closed road.
So we know that that there was a car that sounded like a petrol motor towing a trailer that was at that gate, had to perform a 20 or 30 point turn on a narrow track, so I was there for some time just trying to turn around.
The images of that car are on our Facebook and Instagram accounts, and if you have any information, you should contact Crime Stoppers immediately on 1800 333 000. Zee Meyer and her family have searched tirelessly for her husband, Warren Meyer, since he went missing on Easter Sunday 2008 after setting out for a hike in Victoria's High Country. Warren's disappearance drew outlandish rumours for many years because it coincided with several real events that sounded like plot lines from a teen horror movie. On the same Easter long weekend in 2008 that Warren went missing, a large marijuana plantation was known to be growing in the area. A patient with homicidal tendencies escaped from a nearby psychiatric hospital, and illegal automatic gunfire was heard reverberating around the hills. Warren's wife, Zee, agreed to talk to me about her experience. I couldn't help but start with an apology. After all, I imagine it must be very tiring going over it all again.
It is an exhausting process, but because we believe others have taken Warren's life and we've had so little support from authorities, that I feel I need to speak up, especially with this High Country saga. That's a funny word to use, but I really believe there are people out there who are cowboys with guns, and we believe that's what's basically what's happened to Warren, you know, working on high probability.
I was just speaking to an historian from up that way, Keith Layden is his name. I'm sure you've seen him in different reports. He loves the area, and so he'll talk to people about it, you know. And he's sort of the attitude of, oh, well, there's bad people everywhere and there's cowboys everywhere. But I say to him, no, mate, no, this is like, this to the rest of us, the rest of the world, sounds extreme. Would you agree?
Oh, exactly. And this attitude that you're saying, with him referencing all of that, it shows you just how it's being ignored. And I think if there were, like in our case, if there was this out-of-control shooting with military-style weapons, you could imagine if that was happening in a suburb in Melbourne.
Yeah, and he says, oh, well, yeah, but in Melbourne you've got robberies and you've got home invasions and all that. And I'm like, no, mate.
Yeah, but we do have crime in big cities, but crime doesn't take a holiday in the country. Just because it's the country doesn't mean it's an ideal setting. And I think that these cowboys with guns have got away with it for too long. And I think Warren has unfortunately hiked early, come across this very extreme event. I don't think they expected him to be there. And I feel perhaps it's been an accidental shooting of him.
Well, of course. I mean, because there's no way that Warren, you know, was involved in anything going on up there in a similar way to the way that these other people who've gone missing weren't involved in anything. They were on holidays or they were hiking or they were camping or whatever. So what have you learned about the goings-on in Victoria's High Country? You similarly had no idea about who these people are, who these other people who use this area for other means. What do you know about it now?
Well, I think that Warren walking is on the doorstep of Melbourne. It's a well-known, there's a couple of well-known hiking tracks to hikers, not necessarily understood by these people, but we understand they were camping 200 metres from where Warren parked his car. Now, that in itself should have been investigated. That campsite should have been investigated. And it's
when you say these people, who are you referring to, by the way?
The shooters. I should go back. The landowners have nominated this campsite as a probable place where these people were camping over Easter. I think probably these people didn't realise that it wasn't as remote as they thought. And dotted all around there are residences. Narbathong's a couple of k's away. Hillsville's just 17 minutes drive away. Like it isn't like the Wanangatta area. It's quite populated. In a way, it's sort of hidden by the forest there. But
so it feels really isolated. It feels like you get there and there's, because of the foliage, because of the trees and everything there, you feel like you're a million miles from anybody. But actually there's people, a lot of people living close by and a lot of other people using it recreationally, particularly over Easter long weekend.
Yes, exactly. And it's a very easy place to access over Easter. And, you know, always we searched for 2 years solid, and always there, when we pulled into that car park, Dom Dom Saddle car park, there was always another car pulling in or a car there already. Like, it's not an isolated spot at all.
So you think that, like Warren, they took themselves there for the Easter long weekend, except that their purpose was to go shooting guns?
Yes, and I don't think that, well, you're not allowed to hunt in that area. It's a water catchment, and you're not allowed to hunt at Easter. I think they had were boys with their toys, and they've just shot the bush apart, and they did it on Saturday afternoon and again on Easter Sunday morning, and then all of a sudden the shooting stopped. And the landowners, as well as ourselves, have said, why finish a holiday halfway through Easter? Like, it, that action in itself is very suspicious after you've been, you know, shooting like that. Why not stay another day or so if you're camping there, which is what most campers would do? So we feel that action in itself is quite suspicious.
Because over the years you've had a lot of awful ideas to contend with,
yes,
when it comes to Warren's disappearance, haven't you?
Yes.
And this is the one that seems most likely to you now, is it?
This is such an extreme event. The landowners made a statement this year, in fact. It was the first time they've gone public, and they believe, like we do, that these people were just shooting at anything. And these weapons being so high-powered, automatic weapons, I mean, it just, it's mind-boggling what sort of people are out there doing that sort of thing. It's disgusting. And then to cover up perhaps what you've done is another horrible thing to do to a family. We're carrying this for the rest of our lives. It was reported early on in that first week that Warren went missing. The landowners took it to police and it was not acted on. And 8 months later, when we found this out, we went public on a current affair, and this is when we first found out about the shooting. Already it's 8 months too late. It's a real tragedy. We were the ones, pardon me, asking police to act on it 8 months down the track. So it's very difficult.
Yeah. And I'm a firm believer that our bodies react to things, and when your throat starts to close up, it's telling you that it doesn't want to,
yes,
keep talking about.
To go there, we've had 13 and a half years of this. It's a long time. And I've got small grandchildren, and they're already starting to ask questions about Grandpa. They have to deal with that in time.
And particularly when you're starting to talk about being disbelieved for such a long time, talking to police, and I'm, listen, a big supporter of policing, and certainly at the moment we're talking to police and the missing persons squad about this other case in the High Country, and I think they're doing a good job. But in your case, you had a really hard time, didn't you? You overheard people saying things about Warren being unskillful in the way that he went walking, when you knew that that was not the case. I mean, this was a man who'd walked Kokoda. This was a man who you knew was a skillful hiker.
Yes, deep down in, you know it in the roots of your being. Like, I hiked with him for 31 years. He was only going on a morning's walk before he was going to meet all the holiday group for lunch. It was only a morning's walk in an area that he loved, you know, the mountain ash he loved, and it is on the surface a really lovely place there, and the Black Spur is so pretty, and we've visited that area before. But no way could you ever imagine on Easter Sunday morning there would be these idiots out there shooting the place apart. And why hasn't this been such a big issue? People should be screaming out about that. And they're not. There's a silence. There's a silence, yeah. And I've had a lot of locals approach me about their experiences with people with guns. One man has a hearing loss because he was bashed by these two guys with high-powered rifles. He came across the rifles leaning up against a tree, and that was the response. And there was basically no backup from police with that either. So people, I think, up there could tell you many stories of what these cowboys are doing.
Well, this is my point. There seem to be these throwaway lines in a lot of the media about, oh, yeah, there were people stealing from campsites. Oh, yeah, there are guys who cut fences to get in there in the off-season. There are guys who bury drums full of supplies so they can go in there in the off-season when it's illegal to hunt deer. What do you mean? Why are you just talking about this like it's just part of the way things are? I don't understand this flippant attitude about these guys. There's a couple of Rambos. Isn't one Rambo too many? I don't understand. Is it out of fear, or is it good for the local economy to allow these people to exist? What do you think it is?
Well, I think there's confusion over legal hunters, and there obviously is an issue with deer, but there are people who are taking such liberties up there because they know they won't be found out about it. Because there's this sort of attitude, oh, well, you know, just people out there shooting, like the fellow who got his ear injured from those two men. And that's well documented. It was recorded in the local papers. Someone also in the papers has said, you know, if this had happened in Melbourne, there would have been an outcry. And yet people are having, I think in one case, a horse was shot in the home paddock. There were bullet holes in a house. And there are people outside of that area who have approached me also over holidaying and having these terrible things happen, people with guns. And it's not the legitimate hunter, the one that's doing the right thing. It's these cowboys out there. And I think there are quite a few of them.
And I also wonder, there must be a community in which there are a lot of rumours about what exactly has happened to Russell Hill and Carol Clay, if not all of the people who have gone missing up there, including Warren. There must be a community of people who are talking. There must be a lot of scuttlebutt, you would think.
Oh, I would think so. I think I'd be very hesitant to camp up there. I'd be very hesitant to hike up there. I think people are learning that things aren't as they should be in the bush areas. I can't really comment on the other missing people, but I really believe the couple at Wonangadda, highly probable they've been shot as well, which is a terrible thing to say. But through my own experience, I believe that could be highly probable.
When you hear about a case like theirs, what happens to you and your family? What is the PTSD sort of related reaction that reverberates through your family when that happens?
Well, I feel so sorry for them, but I feel relieved that there's a missing persons unit now that is pursuing this doggedly. When Warren went missing, we were left with one regional detective way out of his depth. This was way out of his experience level, and that's what we got. But now at least you've got highly skilled operators who are throwing everything at this. And I really hope there are answers for that family, because this is a horrible journey. This is the worst journey you could ever make in life.
So really, it was really down to you. I know you and your family, Warren's brother, and your children still search the forest.
Yeah, it's not Warren's brother. It's actually my brother.
It's your brother.
Yes, my brother Alan, who has been a real hero in this. And because we were basically left on our own, we searched for 2 years, and it's not easy out there. We had to bush bash because we believed that he could have been dragged in. That was quite a feasible thing to think about. We had.
What does that mean? He could have been dragged in. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, once shot or once killed, he's been, because it's messy bush. So he wasn't found on or near tracks, and they'd been searched dozens of times, both officially and unofficially. I really hope, my you know, I mean, I'm getting old now, but I really hope lessons are learnt from our case. And it wasn't just the police handling of the case. It was going to the coroner's court and waiting for a death certificate for 10 years so that I could get back and live a normal life. I could actually say my husband was dead and I had a death certificate.
Yeah, because there's lots of formal stuff, isn't there? There's bank accounts and there's insurance and so much like practical stuff you just can't do.
Yeah, and in many ways the process after Warren went missing was as crippling as losing Warren in those circumstances. Like we really have been through hell. We continue to go through hell, but at least I feel that with his death certificate, I could say to the world, my husband is deceased.
Yep. And now I know that you've got a retired detective who just takes it upon himself to help families like yours, Valentine Smith. You're working with him now to try and get an inquest. Is that true?
Well, we've done the inquest. It's not to our satisfaction, but we are working for answers. He has a brilliant mind. He's the most incredible person, and I found him accidentally. You know, it shouldn't be families finding someone accidentally, but his skill level is extraordinary, and he has been the only one to forensically examine events that were occurring up there at the time Warren was hiking, and this was done 11 years down the track. Like, this is not satisfactory. And he believes, like we believe, that Warren has met his fate at the hands of others. And he's such a skilled operator, it would be foolish for people not to listen to what he has to say about this. Yes.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for talking to us and all the best. And I hope that with whatever it is, these new leads that they have in the Hill Clay case, that it may lead to something in your case as well.
Yes.
You would hope.
Thank you. I think there's a warning there. I mean, I can talk about Warren's case and we can talk about the Wanangatta case, but unless people start looking at this issue of guns, someone else can be impacted. And so if I talk up today, it might help that journey into the future, even if we mightn't get answers.
And I think it's good for people to realise too, there's a sort of a sense of security, I think false security in Australia, that the gun buyback after Port Arthur solved all of our problems. You know, I think it's a misunderstanding.
Yes, but when there's someone out there with ill intent, whether it's in the city or the country, there's very little you can do. Even though you might be a skilled operator like Warren and you're doing nothing more than a simple morning's walk, you cannot fight something like that. He would have tried the utmost to get back to us. He was such a survivor, and yet he couldn't do it. And I think of the couple up at Wanangatta. They were so well prepared for their camping trip, so organised. And it's hard to imagine people would do something to you, but there are people no matter where, and it's not just a city problem. There's issues in the country as well. Warren and I, because we camped a lot, we actually were camping up near Jamison somewhere over a holiday period, and we drove in and there were all these men gathered around a campfire. Like, the temperature was well in the 30s. They had this big roaring fire and they started drinking. And then as soon as the sun went down, they were just sitting there shooting off randomly. And Warren and I pitched a tent and we dragged it off the embankment, took it down to the beside the river as a protection from those people. So we've actually experienced it prior to Warren going missing and having this big question mark about shooting.
You'll find more information about Warren Myers' disappearance on our social media, as well as the latest about Russell Hill and Carol Clay. Thank you to our guests, Zee Meyer and Keith Layden, and thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week.
Thank you.
This has been another Smart Fella production in conjunction with the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.